Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look to begin the program at the spring raptor migration with Jerry Liguri. He's been studying raptors for more than 25 years. He's conducted numerous hawk migration counts. He's the author of both Hawks from Every Angle and his latest, which is Hawks at a Distance, Identification of Migrant Raptors. And he joins us from the studios of KCPW in Salt Lake City, Utah. Jerry Liguri, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. Nice to be here.
Are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I am. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I am, for some reason, I'm not hearing you, but we'll get that figured out here. All right, now let's try. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Now I can hear you.
Okay.
All right. We had a little issue there that we had to get taken care of, but we have it taken care of now, and you're hearing me fine.
I'm hearing you just fine.
All right. Wonderful. Well, let's get the definition out of here. We're talking about raptors. What birds fall under that category and why?
Well, raptors or birds of prey, what is considered a raptor is something that seizes their prey with their talons. So, you know, some people ask me, is a shrike a raptor? It catches birds and mice. And I say, no, they don't have talons that they catch their prey with. So that's one of the criteria, and they also have a hooked bill for tearing the prey. And those are the main characters of a raptor.
Okay. I tell you, I'm really enjoying looking through your book, Hawks at a Distance, because the photographer, maybe, why don't you just explain how the book is set up, because I think it's a great way to actually be able to identify those raptors.
You know, it's set up for field identification. I mean, with the advancement of digital photography nowadays, everybody is looking at close-up photos and sending photos over the internet. But that's not really how you identify birds in the field, because most of the birds you see are distant or they're shadowed or in poor light. So this book was set up just to teach people how to identify birds, you know, as they're normally seen in the field. And each species is covered the same way. You know, they're all shown at a distance, you know, in poor light, in good light, at different angles.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's basically a field guide only. I'm obviously, you can read it, and I talk about plumage, and you'll be able to identify close-up birds as well. But it's mostly that's the intent of the book.
And you have usually one nice close-up.
Yeah, and I had to do that. I wanted to do it because it's nice looking, and people really do, you know, appreciate looking at close-up photos, and it's nice to open each species with a nice portrait.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, are there some keys to learning about hawks and hawk identification?
Yes, there's many keys, but I can tell you that the number one thing that people should concentrate on when they're first learning is to learn the basics well. A lot of people get caught up in the minutiae and, you know, all the plumage differences. And yes, plumage, it is important, but you really want to learn the basics of the shape and the flight style of each bird well before you start moving on to all the minutiae. I mean, you know, I identify most of the birds I see in the field, I identify by shape and flight style, the way they move, the way they soar, the way they flap, before I really ever see clear plumage traits. So, you know, learn the structure and the way they move, and that's much more important than all the other minutiae that takes years and years to learn.
Okay. Well, we have some callers online. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post a question or maybe a photograph of a raptor there at the Larry Mueller Show. If you're a raptor watcher, what fascinates you about them? Where do you go to see them? Interested in hearing from you. And John in Prairie du Chien up with a question or comment. Hey. Hi, John.
Good morning. Morning, Jerry. It's Hawk Dad.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to make a comment that a lot of the listeners probably have no idea about how Jerry conducts some of this work that he does. But often he's going into a wilderness area like the Goshute Range in Nevada or the Manzano Range in New Mexico, central New Mexico. And he's up in a wilderness area sometimes for 2 months at a time, okay, camping in this situation. And, you know, he's recording all the birds that are passing by one of these places. But that's where I met him. And this guy is not only good, he's great. I didn't believe it at first because he could ID a bird miles off just by a wingbeat. But those of us that were off on the project were the trappers, okay? Then we'd catch the bird and they're like, oh, yeah, he's right. He knew that. How did he know that from miles away? Anyway. Thanks, Larry, for having him on.
All right, John.
Thank you.
Well, Jerry, talk a little bit about your research. And, I mean, you really sit out there for a couple months at a time sometimes?
Yeah, I've sat out as long as 4 months at a time. It's been a while, though. I mean, I've gone on trips in the past 10 years on my own time. But, you know, maybe it's been 2 week trips. But when I used to count hawks, you know, for a living, let's say, yeah, you would stay out for 4 months, live out of a tent, record all the migrants that go by, you know, south in the fall, north in the spring, and a lot of times there were trapping stations. They were putting bands on the birds and taking measurements and trying to learn different things from their data, and it was interesting to, you know, have them confirm your identifications. If you'd say, here comes a Cooper's hawk, it's a you know, I think it's a male, a second-year male Cooper's, and they say, wow, it is. It's a great thing. It's a great way to confirm, you know,
and again,
you're seeing.
And you were kind of going by the basics that you were talking about earlier, I assume.
Most times, yes. I mean, when you're aging and sexing birds, then you need to know the finer details of plumage and things like that and molt. But, yeah, most of the times when you're counting birds on migration, it's, you know, wing beat, flight style, you know, does it soar in tiny little circles, big circles? Is it moving slowly? You know, what's the shape of the bird, long-winged, short-winged, exactly.
And, John, I thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Maybe you've had an interesting experience with a raptor, maybe even in your own backyard. Love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. And speaking of backyards, what hawks are mostly likely to be seen in backyards?
You know, it's usually the sharp-shinned hawk and the Cooper's hawk. They are notorious bird catchers, and they hang around, you know, bird feeders. People feed birds, the seed eaters. They'll put out seed for the birds, and groups of birds will congregate, and the excipiters, the sharp-shinned and Coopers, tend to, you know, find those locations and stay all winter. So those are the two most likely backyard birds.
And they are a lot of fun to see in your backyard.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a fleeting view. Sometimes they come busting through the yard and they're gone, you know, if they don't catch anything instantly.
We had we had both of them at one time, or both species at one time or another, just sitting up in a big tree right next to our own lawn. And of course, then you have never had there were no birds at the feeders during those periods,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But they were fun to watch. Sometimes they'd sit for an hour just looking.
You know, can I say something quick?
Yeah.
The guy that just called, John.
Yeah.
My book, Hawks at a Distance, is dedicated to his son, John. He passed away a couple years ago, but I just thought I'd say that out loud. And the guy, John, that called is a really wonderful guy. He does a lot of research on hawks, and he's just dedicated as anyone is.
Oh, well, I'm glad you mentioned that, and I'm glad John called. David in Decorah, Iowa, has a question or comment. Hi, David.
Hi, Larry, and good morning, Jerry. This is Dave Kester from over on the Iowa side of the river. And I just missed Hawker's call, but I'm the guy that had that red tail we talked about a couple years ago.
I do remember, yeah, the light Harlins.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was calling to kind of bring up to talk about. I mean, we kind of figured out it was a light morph Harlins, which is normally a dark red tail. So I was kind of hoping you could kind of talk about the different morph characteristics and then maybe the subspecies aspects, in particular the red tails, because there's, you know, genetics now, they're kind of saying that, you know, they're not sure what the subspecies or what's just a morph, and then the contradiction of a light morph Harlins and kind of that ballywick. And by the way, it's really good to hear you on the radio.
No.
Thank you. You know, that is a loaded question because there is a lot we still have to learn about red-tailed hawks and subspecies. You know, the AOU, Ornithological Association, they are splitting birds into new species, you know, more often than now than they had been in the past because of, you know, new findings. There's always more to learn about birds, and especially red-tailed hawks. And the real issue with the species and what each is that it's hard to define their, first of all, their geographic location, because a lot of these, what he was talking about, Harlins red-tailed hawks, they breed in the north in these remote areas, and it's hard to study these areas and exactly where they're located, how far west are they, how far south are they. We just found, a friend of mine just found a Harlins red-tailed hawk just at the border of North Dakota. And that's very far south for what they were once thought. And there's a lot of interbreeding between these birds. So, you know,
yeah,
it's hard to know exactly where one subspecies begins and where the next one ends. They all kind of run into each other. But, you know, DNA says that all of these red tails are basically red-tailed hawks. And then do you go on DNA alone? I mean, well, who knows? You know, there's just a lot to learn about it.
And red-tailed hawks, at least in my sort of neighborhood and in the travels that I take in this part of Wisconsin, to see red-tails, I haven't even thought about it very much, but almost every day, you know, at least three or four times a week, at the bare minimum, I will see a red-tail.
And they're common, and they're usually out, you know, on the forest edge or on a utility pole. They're easy to see. They're big. So, and you have a lot of them in your area.
Yeah, we have lots of them. David, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Sarah in Madison, I want to give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. Wonderful to talk to you both. I was just thinking about how I see red-tailed hawks, you know, every day, and I still love to see them. But anyway, I was driving down a road and caught out of the corner of my eye a large bird. I pulled over quickly so that I could get some identification from it, and it flew up. As it flew up, its wings touched at the top and at the bottom. And that's all I could get really from it. And I ran it by everybody I knew, and nobody seemed to pay any attention to that description of it. Does that mean anything to you as at all?
Well,
yes.
What it really shows is when something is trying to gain altitude like that real quickly and using powered flight to do it, they're going to flap. You know, harder than they normally do. It really doesn't mean anything as far as the idea of that bird. There are birds that flap deeper than other birds, but it probably was just struggling to get up to that branch more likely than anything.
Oh, I was hoping for something really, really exact. But are there birds
something
that do
rare?
Flap? Well, do owls flap like that? Do some birds flap like that? A full, you know, 180 degrees. Are there birds that flap like that normally?
Not normally.
Okay.
You know,
well,
there
please.
Are birds that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably. You know, a Cooper's hawk, when it does a courtship flap, it flaps way up in the air, but that's when they're up in the air displaying. So something flapping into a tree like that, no, I wouldn't be able to tell you what it was. You didn't see anything else, though? Any color?
I saw lots else, but it wasn't, I know it wasn't a red tail, and it was, so it was, I thought it might have been a Cooper's, or it might have been something, it was large and a sharp, you know, but it's fine. That's what I was hoping to have discovered something, but
okay.
I love your show. Thanks so very much, both of you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks very much for calling. Talking today about raptors today with Jerry Liguri, who is the author of Hawks from Every Angle and his latest, Hawks at a Distance, Identification of Migrant Raptors. Larry Mueller here. Amanda Magnus, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking raptors today with our guest, Jerry Liguri. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in today. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to have you do that as well. And if you have some photos, post them there. Mark in Lodi, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for
great
calling.
Great show. I recently had I live in Lake Wisconsin, and recently had a really cool experience. We have pileated woodpeckers, barred owls, and I was also watching a nest of, I had a female Cooper's hawk that was feeding a couple of adolescents, adolescent birds, and it was really cool the way it, kind of flies through the woods with that little tiny narrow tail, and it unfortunately flew into one of my big windows that faced the water, and I called one of my vets. He lives pretty close to me, and he recommended I call this lady who lives in Sauk Prairie. She's a she rescues raptors. And when I called her, she told me, now be really careful because the talons are razor sharp, and cover it with a blanket and bring it in a bag. And it was, I mean, my heart was pounding while I was doing this. And this bird was like 18 inches tall. And when I called ahead, she said it can't be a Cooper's hawk because females don't get that big, but she just reached in the bag when I got there and pulled it out and said, sure enough, it is a Cooper's hawk. And she put some powder on it, and all these little flies came off of it, and this bird was really skinny from feeding the two adolescent birds. But the moral of the story, I guess, is she recommended I put these decals on my windows to prevent other hawks and birds from flying into my window, and it's been we haven't had a problem since then.
Very cool. Comment from you, Jerry?
Yeah, it's pretty popular to put those silhouettes on your window. I have a few on my windows as well. I have a big picture window, and occasionally something still hits the window, but it does. It you know, these little birds see this silhouette of a hawk, and they tend to avoid it. It doesn't stop every strike, but it definitely helps. I do agree with the caller.
Jerry, I haven't seen any Cooper's hawks around since. They're not territorial. They usually won't come back to where they were raised.
So this was the nest from last year, and they're not back yet this year?
No.
It's might still be a little early. The birds here in Utah just getting back to the nest, so maybe keep an eye another couple weeks. Usually they do come back every year to the same nest. Sometimes they get pushed out. You know, if a great horned owl took over the nest, they'll move on. But, you know, maybe keep an eye out. Maybe something happened to one of the adults.
Sure.
Would hate to hear that, but
yeah,
they still could come back. There's still plenty of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark, for calling. And John in McFarland, hello.
Good morning, Larry, Jerry. I have a question. I know that raptors are extremely keen-eyed, and I had an experience. We have bird feeders outside of our kitchen window, and One day I glanced out, and down on the ground was a hawk. I don't know what kind of a hawk it was, but it was pecking away, or it was tearing away at the carcass of a bird it had caught there. And I went outside and very crept around, and when his head was down, I would take a quick step forward, and I got within, you know, oh gosh, within probably 7 feet from it, and finally it, but it would look up, but it would, looks like it was looking right at me, but it didn't see me. And so I'm wondering, do they see shapes, you know, or is it just movement that they see so well?
Oh, they saw you. Yeah, they see everything. Yeah, it they are so focused on prey. You know, even if they're hungry and they haven't caught a bird all day, and they catch something, and you're there, they're watching you intently. It's just they want to. Yeah, they're just so focused on, and that's a lot of times why they hit windows too. They're chasing something, and they're just so focused on what they're chasing that they don't see the window. They're, you know, it's almost tunnel vision. But yeah, I'm sure the bird saw you. If it was looking up at you,
yeah,
it was probably just wondering, hey, if he gets any closer, I'm going to take off with this bird. But a lot of times, if they catch a bird that's fairly heavy, they have a hard time flying off with it. So, you know,
well, it certainly was a wondrous experience, and I'll never forget it.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, John. Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. By the way, we finally have some open lines again. We can get you on pretty quickly with your question or your experience. I'd love to hear what experiences you've had with raptors at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Mary in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Yes, around our neighborhood we have some nice large oak trees and other kind of trees. And I saw, maybe about 4 years ago, a juvenile hawk, what they call red-tailed hawk, around here. But just about last Saturday, I was trying to find out what this bird was. I thought maybe it was a crow. I saw black, but when it was flying away from me, I saw a flash of white, and then it would go to this silver maple tree that's having problems and maybe getting sticks, and then flying to this oak that was kind of trying to come into leaf. And it's been flying around here, but I've been, you know, getting my binoculars out, but it's been hard to see. And I was wondering if it was a kestrel?
Yeah, kestrels, they nest in cavities, you know, holes in trees, old abandoned buildings, little nest boxes, and they don't take sticks to the nest. This must have been a larger hawk carrying pretty big sticks, I would assume.
I couldn't see the sticks, but it seemed to go to this silver maple and then fly to this oak tree.
Yeah.
You described it as black?
Well, yeah, it had black on it, but I thought it was a crow, and then going away, I saw a flash of white, and I haven't been able to see it.
That's a pretty tough... Pretty tough to identify from that.
Maybe it was just, you know, a lot of times, well, you would have known if it was a crow, but a lot of times these flashes of white are more of the sun reflecting on the sheen of a black bird, and it almost looks silvery white. But, you know, that's all I could really think of to come up with. If you could keep an eye on it, see if it comes back.
Yeah, and so many, you know, I was looking through your book, you have several photos of each bird and from a distance, and I mean, a lot of them appear black, and they're not black.
True, and in Wisconsin, there I'm not sure there's any blackish or dark morph buteos nesting, bringing sticks to nests. If I'm correct, dark red tails are west of that, and rough legs are north of that, and you know, I wouldn't. You know, think a broadwing hawk, dark one would be there, but it could be. It's a tough question.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks for calling. You might take a look at Jerry's book. Maybe you can discern from his book, Hawks at a Distance. Maybe you'll see something in there that reminds you of what you've been looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Jim in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Jim.
No, Jen. Jen in Milwaukee.
Oh, hi, sorry, Larry. Jen.
That's okay. I've seen some Cooper's Hawks in my backyard, and I live in the middle of the city. I mean, there's no parks or open area anywhere near us. How common is it to see a Cooper's Hawk in an actual urban environment? The other thing is, I've always thought of that there are two types of birds. There's those with binocular forward-facing vision and food.
Jerry?
It's true. You know, people that really love raptors and are, you know, raptor nuts, they basically say there's hawks and there's hawk food. But, yeah, Cooper's Hawks are pretty common now in suburban areas, well, especially in winter. But even nesting now, there's lots of Cooper's Hawks in Salt Lake City. And there's lots of big trees, you know, and by you, I'm sure there's Cooper's Hawks in the cities there, too. They never used to be, or at least they weren't known to be as frequently as they are now. I think they just are expanding with the starlings expanding. They have just an endless food supply. But, yeah, they're definitely more common in suburban areas these days.
We have some huge trees in our neighborhood, and there's a Cooper's that takes up residence in part in our next-door neighbors. Huge tree. Yeah, because they're fun to watch for sure. Thanks, Jim. Julie in Port Washington. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have kind of an interesting question. I rescued over the winter a three-legged chihuahua who is 5 pounds, and he loves to take walks in the woods. And one of my friends said to me recently, you really have to be careful. I mean, I always have them on a leash, but even in my backyard. And I'm just wondering how serious of a threat is a hawk going to be to a small dog like that? Or if I'm with him, is that going to be enough to deter it?
Yeah, that's going to be it. I mean, if you're with him, I wouldn't worry about anything. And I wouldn't worry too much about leaving your dog in your yard either. Great horned owls are known to take people's cats.
Yeah. At night, I'm always out with him, but, mm-hmm. I have let him out. I have a fenced-in backyard, and I have a bigger dog, too, so I let them out in the morning by themselves. But when my friend said, I've heard stories about, hawks taking away small dogs, I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's happened. Yeah. Eagles have taken people's dogs. But so it's not impossible in your backyard. I wouldn't worry too much.
No, that'd be low on my priority. I'd be more worried you'd get out of the fence area and get run over by a car.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other issue. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bev emailed and said, I'd like to be able to identify ospreys as they are soaring. Any tips for identifying an osprey as it soars?
Yes. Ospreys are pretty distinct. They have long, long, narrow wings. They're almost gull-like, but they don't have the real pointed tips like a gull. Just real long, lanky wings, and they always hold them kind of drooped down a little bit. A lot of birds hold their wings up in a V like a turkey vulture, but an osprey's wings are always slightly drooped or considerably drooped in all postures, gliding, soaring. They're always just drooped down. And they're, they're very, very white with blackish underwings. So it's real contrasting pattern. It's pretty easy to recognize. But the shape is always, just so distinct, extremely long and lanky. And, the top side is black with the kind of a white head and a black eye line, almost bald eagle-like from the top. But, yeah, the shape is real distinct, and they're very steady. Even in the strongest winds, they rarely, get thrown around by the wind. But the black and white pattern underneath is pretty distinct.
Yep. Annika and Sister Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Annika.
Hi. I have a little story about a young red-tailed hawk that I rescued. I was on my way to Green Bay, and we were driving along, and I was going about 65 miles an hour, and I didn't see it until I got real close. Even though it was daylight, you would imagine that it was a roadkill. But as I was driving over it, I see its little head duck down. And I was like, oh, my God, it's a hawk. And there's lots of traffic. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I have to turn around. I turned around, and I was pulled up behind it, put my hazards on. And I walked out on the highway thinking, how am I going to catch this hawk? Well, I happened to have a beach towel in the back of my truck. And I walked out. I wasn't sure if it was going to peck me or scratch me, but it looked like it was in shock. So I wrapped it real snug in the towel and picked it up, get back in my car, sit in the car, and it's sitting in my lap just staring at me, and I'm staring at it going, what am I going to do with you now? So driving to Green Bay, because I live in Sister Bay, and I drive all the way out to the little Suamico Zoo, and they tell me that they can't take it there, and then they sent me back to, I believe it's the Bay Park Animal Sanctuary in Green Bay there, where mm-hmm. they take rescue animals. And I brought it in there. They asked me my name, my address, my phone number, where I actually found the hawk, because they like to release it back to where it was found. And later on, they called back and said it was a young red-tailed hawk. He did get hit by a car, and it was just a little bit of wing damage, but he was eating like a horse, and they were ready to release him, and they let him go, and I was pretty excited about that. So
that's a great story, isn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, it is. It's always nice when the rehabber does that, calls the person back and lets them release it. You know, you can
see the results. Oh, I named him and everything. His name was Charlie. I mean, I was calling them saying, how's Charlie doing? Well, he was eating. He was doing great. And anyhow, I have to say that it was really on the highway there. There's two lanes. I mean, it's a four-lane highway, and nobody slowed down. I'm out in the middle of the road trying to grab this hawk, and I was actually shocked that no one hit him before I got there, because at least six or seven more cars ran him over before I even turned around and back to the road. So,
oh man, that's a lucky hawk.
Yeah, and they did say that young juvenile hawks like to swoop down on the road because they see roadkill, but then they become also roadkill because they're not used to it being dead. They think it's alive.
Yeah.
So, but that's my story, and I'm really happy that I got to save one. So,
mm-hmm. Thanks, Annika. That's a great story.
And yeah, I used to rehabilitate injured birds back in the late '80s, and that was my full time job, and I loved it. I loved when the birds made it, and that I could actually release them back. And you'd be surprised how resilient they are. I've had birds come in with one eye was damaged, so it was going to be blind in one eye, and you would give it time to learn how to catch food on its own again in the cage, and then eventually it would catch it on the first try every time. And, I've released one-eyed birds, and I've gotten banding returns on them, years later that, it was still alive. So, it's a great service, rehabilitation centers. It takes a lot of dedication, too, to run a center like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Great great story, and I thank her very much for calling. Pete in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hi. Enjoying your show very much. I live in the west side of Madison. Noticed about 3 weeks ago a hawk in my yard. It hopped around and picked up the branch and flew up to across the street to a little stand of woods and a nest, and then saw it do that a few more times over the next several days. But we really haven't seen it recently. I'm not sure whether I guess behavioral questions about hawks and nests. How long do they nest? Do they nest in pairs? Should we be able to see any activity around the nest? Do they hide down inside with baby hawklings or whatever they are?
Mm-hmm.
Right here in the house, but I just wondered, maybe you could tell me a little bit more about how they behave. And
mm-hmm. sure,
yeah, they're very active when they get together before laying the eggs. They do a lot of courtship, a lot of displays, a lot of roller coaster flight type of stuff, and then once they feel the nest is they've got enough sticks and greenery and they're ready to lay eggs, the female does most of the incubation, and she'll sit down in that nest real tight. You'll think that nest was inactive the way she just doesn't move. So, once they lay eggs, and this time of year they could easily be red-tailed hawks could easily be laying eggs in Wisconsin. There's a pair in the Cornell Lab for Ornithology has a nest cam in Ithaca, and she's been on eggs quite a while now. You can follow her progress through this nest cam. So, and that's pretty far north. So by you, there's red tails on eggs already, I'm sure. And it, you know, they're very active beforehand, but once they lay eggs, you know, the male will come in every now and then with food. But other than that, it almost looks like the nest is inactive, the way she just sits all day long. If you follow up on it, you'll see that, you know, it takes, I don't know, maybe 41 days for the eggs to hatch. And then things start getting noisy as the chicks get bigger. They start begging. And then you're really aware of the nest. But I would just recommend anyone finding nests, you know, like you say, there's a Cooper's Hawk nest in your neighbor's yard. Well, obviously, there's nothing you could do about the disturbance factor of that. You have to go about your daily activities, and that bird is obviously not afraid of people. But if you find nests, it's great to watch them from a distance. I'm wary of anyone getting real close and going back to the nest every single day. That's, you know, you just want to keep the disturbance to a minimum, you know.
Yep.
For any nest.
Makes good sense. Again, thank you, Pete. Andy and Mercer, hello.
Good morning. My wife and I were in Ireland, and we went to a raptor center and found it intriguing, very, very informative, even got to handle a Harris hawk. But I was wondering, are there raptor centers in the United States anywhere?
Yes. I think there's a pretty well-known one in outside of Boise, Snake River. I'm trying to think of the name of it. I don't know. There's a World Center for Birds of Prey, I think. I'm not sure if that's in Idaho. You know, you can look up on the internet, though. And I'm
Google just, it, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a few like that. And they have all birds from all over the world, too. I think it's the World Center for Birds of Prey, it's called.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Super, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Jean in Appleton. Hi, Jean.
Yeah, hi. I had a comment about the lady who called about a crow, and about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a crow that I saw several times in Appleton, in the city, alongside the road, and it had some white feathers on its back and one in its tail, and so it had some sort of mutation, I guess. So it is possible that she saw a crow with some white on it. And then my question regards, I think it's called kettling of hawks when they're migrating. Last Thursday, I had some stuff going on outside in my yard, and with a neighbor, we happened to look up, and we saw this group of hawks assembling from all around and circling around up above, and they were so high that we couldn't distinguish what kind of hawks they were, and I didn't have my binoculars out, but they appeared to have a somewhat longer tail than a red-tailed hawk. And while we watched, there were 9 of them, and then there may have been more that joined them later. We didn't count again, but then all of a sudden they all started moving northward. Now, are those always species that don't stay here? Such as the red tail, are they more likely to be either rough legs or broad wing hawks?
No, not necessarily. You know, there's a lot of red tail hawks that breed north and into Canada. So, and this is a good time to see them. Were they pale? They weren't black.
But they were so high that it was, and the sun was bright, and it was very hard to see. But I had the feeling the tail was longer than a red tail hawk.
Maybe they were Cooper's hawks.
Well, we have Cooper's hawks here year-round, so I have never seen them assemble like that and then all take off at once. But I did once in the fall see broadwing hawks do that, but they were going south.
Yeah, they're notorious for forming big kettles. It's just not time yet for broadwing hawks. They haven't really arrived in your area yet. Usually it's late April, you know, the 20th, 24th, where they really start to show up. It's not impossible to see one or two right now, but they haven't really gotten there in big groups. It would be unusual for Cooper's hawks to just form kettles. They are usually in mixed kettles with other birds. They do soar, but, you know, it's hard to say what you saw. But, you had the about the crow, that is a perfect description. Yeah. It probably was a crow with some white feathers that that other caller saw.
Probably. Thank you very much, Gene, for calling. And, boy, Jerry, the time flew. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
It really flew by. I really appreciate it. I'm really enjoying your book, and I hope you'll be with us again. Will you come back and be with us again?
Absolutely, anytime.
Oh, it's great to have him with us today. Jerry Liguri, been studying raptors for more than 25 years, done all kinds of hawk counts, and has written Hawks from Every Angle. His latest is Hawks at a Distance, Identification of Migrant Raptors, and he joined us today from the studios of KCPW in Salt Lake City, Utah. And thanks to the folks at KCPW as well. Well, seeing raptors is even more exciting than talking about them. And if you've ever seen one swooping down to capture prey, that's an extra thrill. I've certainly seen that with eagles. Now we're going to talk about catching our own prey, fish. Guide Gary Engberg is here with tips and a forecast for the upcoming fishing season. That's next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.